Our next speakers are Gus and Gekko or Geo from the Tor project. They both became onto the project have been working with the project for a long time now. And a couple of years ago, they both came on as employees. Gus as the team leader as the community lead of the project, and Geo as the network team lead, where he has been working on improving the health of the network and making sure that bad relays are removed. Give them all a great round of applause from home, and welcome to the stage, guys. Take it away.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
This is Geir from the Tor project, and I have Gus with me today to talk about the state of the onion, a yearly thing. And we are really happy to be here at the CCC and think about providing an update, what we did, what we're excited about next year, and what is basically in the pipeline. Before we start, assuming we have some folks watching this talk, wondering what this Tor thing is, we thought about picking them up, getting them up to speed, and talking a bit what we are actually talking about here. So Tor is concerned with the online anonymity and censorship circumvention. It's we produce free software, and we actually have an open network of relay operators and relays and operated by volunteers. But that's not the only meaning of Tor. You find we are as well, and community of researchers, developers, users, and the mentioned relay operators. As a project, we are a US 501c3 nonprofit organization. So that's the different notions of Tor you might encounter. So what is actually the Tor design? How does it help with the anonymity goal or censorship circumvention goal? So assume you have two parties who want to communicate over the internet, they want, in particular, Alice wants to hide their location or their IP address. So they can't connect directly to Bob, because that would be obvious where they are coming from. So they try to get their traffic through multiple relays, so no single relay can actually betray Alice here, and find out what Alice is up to or where she is coming from. So what Alice is doing, or actually Alice Tor client on her machine. It's picking a path through the network with three relays mentioned here, with R1, R2, and R3, before she is finally reaching Bob. So this looks like something like this here. And at the end, Alice is asking the exit relay, or relay 3 on this slide, to connect to Bob, and then they can talk to each other. That's the basic underlying concept of Tor. Then there's the problem that we sometimes see censorship in the wild, which means that an adversary is trying to prevent Alice from actually reaching the Tor network, and so that she can't benefit from the privacy properties the network is providing. And in this case, the direct connection to the cloud above there with the public relays is prevented. And what Alice needs to do is to connect to so-called bridges, which are non-public relays in this case, which work as a first hop, and then she is picking the usual remaining two hops before connecting to Bob. So this is a rough idea of how Tor is trying to prevent censorship, or to bypass censorship, to be more correctly, and which will play a role in the coming slides, because we talk a bunch about anti-censorship work we do and have done and want to do. So that's basically Tor in a nutshell. There are many more things to Tor, but that's hopefully enough to understand what the following updates are about. So if you recall the previous slides, that was basically trying to provide privacy at the network layer for for users hiding their IP addresses. But as we know, the web, in particular browsers, are large beasts, and that's by far not enough anymore to guarantee any meaningful privacy on the internet because of all the tracking mechanisms and ways of fingerprint users. So a couple of years ago, we essentially started to provide a tool called Tor Browser, which is essentially a fork of Firefox and has dozens of patches on top of that. So we can actually provide the privacy guarantees we think are important. And this tool got some some meaningful updates over the year. And one of these is that we overhauled the Tor connection experience. Some of you who are already familiar with Tor Browser know about this weird modal dialog popping up once they start Tor Browser, which was up until the Tor Browser 10.5, the default way of connecting to the Tor network with the Tor Browser. And this is gone because that's a really weird experience. If you have any other browser, what is happening once you start it, you get a browser window and then start searching or typing or whatever. You never get any modal dialog, which is a UX experience, which is not really the best. So we fixed that. There's no modal dialog during startup anymore. And there are easy ways to, as an easy way to connect automatically now. So you don't even see this particular starting screen anymore. Overall, it's giving a much smoother experience for your Tor browser usage, which is pretty exciting. Then we finally deployed Snowflake, which is a means for helping censored users on the internet, which is kind of a next level step in the arms race against censors. And this has been in the works for a couple of years and has been testing for months in our alpha release series and finally made it earlier this year and stable. And you can see on this graph how the usage grew over time, starting with the initial launch in the stable series. At the beginning of July this year, you see there's a continually growing numbers of Snowflake users. You see at the right side the spike up and down, and Gus will talk about this a bit later. But it's a growth, and we can see this, and we can hear the feedback for users. So what you can help is running Snowflakes. How this is going to work is a thing Gus will explain later on, but there's already a thing you can try to remember and getting out of this talk, so you can help censored users. Yeah, that's two of the highlights for this year. For the next year and upcoming years, we plan to make it even easier to help censored users around the world. For instance, by faster updating the default bridges we ship with Tor Browser. Usually what's happening right now is that once we want to bundle new bridges to Tor Browser, we have to have a new release, which is pretty cumbersome and slow. We want to make this faster so that you can keep your Tor Browser but get updated bridges if there are any available, which we can ship. And then we continue working on the general idea of just helping users bypassing their censorship. They should have a button like "I'm censored," and then Tor Browser should figure out everything it needs to provide the working bridges for the user in the particular region where they are. That's the kind of the golden standard where we want to get to. So this will be pretty exciting work. Then for another project, actually a multi-year project, which we recently started, I want to give an update. The Tor Browser thing is pretty cool in the sense that you have an app and then you have per app settings kind of, and per app means of providing privacy properties. But particularly on mobile, where you have kind of dozens or hundreds of apps, it's pretty cumbersome if it's usable or possible at all to configure every app to use Tor as a proxy. So what we want, or we actually want, or what users want on mobile at least, is a way to route all safe traffic and specific safe applications through Tor. You don't want to configure this per app. That's not the way to go. That's a pretty VPN-like functionality. Do I put VPN in quotes here because that's kind of a working, you know, concept. We probably want to come up with a better term at the final product, because VPN is kind of tainted, and there people have particular understandings what it means, VPN is, and we have kind of a new tool here where Tor's trying to fill a niche and provide better guarantees than regular VPNs do. So we want probably come up with a different term, but that's pretty close from functionality point of view what Tor wants to do. And the bonus points here as well are that we can easily expand our censorship circumvention means to the whole device and don't have to deal with that on a per app basis either. The work is done with our friends from the Guardian project and the Leap Encryption Access project, which is exciting. And we plan to have this available on Android first, likely starting in 2023. Maybe already at the end of next year, we'll see. As I said, it's a multi-year project. It's spanning different teams at Tor. It's using Artie, the new Rust-based Tor client we are currently writing. So that's a pretty exciting project, and we hope we make serious progress over next year. So let me leave the application part right now and talk a bit about what we could call network health. One of the points which frequently comes up, which is important, is our work in the bad relay area. The dealing with malicious relays remains hard with our limited resources. We removed, for instance, several large groups of access relays in early 2021 and used this actually as kind of a wake-up call to seriously invest in this area, which means writing new scanners for detecting malicious behavior and do a better monitoring for malicious behavior at the network. And I think over the year, I'm confident to say that we actually got a safer Tor network. And compared with previous years, I think it's fair to say as well that we right now have a safer Tor network as well compared to what we had in the previous years. So that is exciting progress worth mentioning here. But that's not enough, right? So what we actually want to do to provide an even safer experience and tackling the problem of malicious relays more at the core is leveraging trust in our relay community, helping with those problems. And the key point to take away here is that it's a mixed approach in a sense that we have technical tools helping with bad relay work. But as well, this is a social approach, which is important here, because we can solve the problem of malicious relays with technical means alone. And this is a thing we take into account right now already. We started successfully, I think, with experiments. For instance, we removed, like 3 weeks ago, two large groups of relays which we deemed to be malicious, which were perfectly configured from a configuration perspective. They had all my family settings set, and they had a contact information set, which was supposed to be non-spoofable. So they did all the technical parts right, but still, once we started to contact them and tried to talk to them, it was pretty clear they were very likely malicious, and we removed them quickly from the network, which showed us once more that there's a social component here too, which is important. And this will be a priority for the network health team, not only for the team, I mean, there's a community team involved as well and other teams too, but it would be important for the Tor project in 2022. What this means at the end, you know, taking trust into account is not set yet. There could be the idea that we say, okay, we have here a large group of trusted relays and they get more traffic to see, overall more traffic to see from users compared to the non-trusted group. This has performance implications and many other implications, which we need to explore in detail starting this year but more next year and probably for the coming years. Which actually brings me to my final point for my part, which is talking a bit about the Tor performance and the work we did this year and what's coming up next. So if you look at these in this graph or those two graphs, you see a growing gap between the bandwidth which is advertised on the network and the actually used bandwidth over the years, starting from, you know, kind of 2011 and continuing up until today. This is kind of counterintuitive because one of the things we usually get as kind of most of the most important complaint is that Tor is slow. So what's the issue here? If we have so much kind of surplus bandwidth, but it's not getting used, but on the other hand, users are complaining Tor is slow. So we have a project which is trying to solve those problems. Now, we think that a big part of this equation is coming up with a good congestion control for the Tor network, which was lacking so far, so that we have an overall better bandwidth usage. And this got implemented this year, which is exciting and will be deployed next year. And we hopefully see not this growing gap anymore, but this shrinking gap. Additionally, one thing we sorely missed was feedback for relay operators, whether their relays are doing well, whether they are overloaded, and whether they can improve settings and make the problem modifications. So we implemented a series of kind of warnings or triggers which relay operators can monitor, and we from the Tor project side can monitor as well. And then we can ping relay operators and helping them figure out their stuff and getting those issues fixed, resolving the overload they see on their relays. And plan for 2022 as well is that we do better load balancing by figuring out which relays are seriously overloaded and moving traffic from them back to less overloaded relays, giving an overall better performance and user experience for our users. So I think that's all I had to say from my side. Thanks for listening. And now Gus will pick this up.
Thank you, Gior. So hello, this is Gus from the Tor project. And today I will talk a little bit about the community team and our work on the Tor community. So we will cover user support, the new user support forum, our new gamification project, the Run a Bridge campaign that we started last month. And we are also going to talk about the censorship, the Tor censorship in Russia. So, here it is. So for the Tor forum, we, at the beginning of this year, we start to think about having a place where people can ask questions that is not a mailing list. So in 2021, what looks like a support forum, you know, where users can do questions and receive help. So email and user documentation are nice, are cool, are important, because people in censored regions, they can access this resource. They can send an email from Iran, from China, from Russia now, and they can access our documentation. But we were thinking about other ways to reach out to this community, to find places, to find a way to them to communicate and ask questions. So part of this plan is to, the first part of this plan is to have the Tor forum, so people can access this information and ask questions on a new user support forum that's friendly, and you can install an app on your phone and contact and talk with others. And later I will talk about the second part of this plan. So we launched the Tor Forum this year in October, and it's been very nice, and I invite everyone to join our Tor Forum. The other project that we are doing at the community team is a gamification project for relay operators. So the idea is to understand what are the motivations, how we can incentivize the Tor network, how we can grow the Tor network, basically, or why people are stopping to run relays. So we are doing this as part of our internship, and Nico is our intern, and she's doing this work. And we have a survey online, so people can ask some questions and give feedback about their experience running relays. And last month, in November, we launched a campaign to get more breeds. And so far, breeds are very important for users living in sensory countries. This is how they are going to connect to the Tor network. So our plan was to have 200 new OBS4 breeds. OBS4 is a pluggable transport that can obfuscate your Tor connection. And the plan was 200 new breeds, and the campaign stats at now are 900 new running breeds, 800 new OBS4 breeds, and a network size bump from 1,200 to 2,000 new breeds overall. So the campaign is a real success. And you can see on the graph here on the screen how the campaign changed the course of the network size here. And so this campaign started in November, and in December a situation just happened. So at the beginning of December we received a lot of users asking for support in Russia. And it was not, well, we usually have some users asking help, but this time was different. We received like a lot of user support requests, basically emails asking for Tor breeds. And that was very strange because we didn't know anything happening. So we started to investigate with UNI, which is a open observatory of network interference, to understand what was happening. So we start to see some anomalies on the Tor on Russia, basically blocking not just our website, but also the Tor network. And not only the Tor network, but also some Tor breeds. And that was like we start to look into that to understand what was happening. So we start to collect information, and we put together in a ticket. And a few days later, we received an email from Russian authorities saying that they were going to block the Tor project domain and basically without giving us a reason. And we didn't understand what was happening. So I'm going to skip the lawyer part and the reasons that they are blocking the Tor project website, and I will focus on what they are actually doing and how that's impacting the Tor network and the Tor community. So Russia is the second country, largest country of Tor users. It's the United States, Russia, Germany, Netherlands, and other countries that are the top 10, top 20 countries that are using Tor. And we start to look on metrics and see that the numbers of Tor users were decreasing in December. And we also saw that the bridge users was increasing. So you can see clearly the impact of the censorship on this graph here. And this graph is available on metrics portal too. So the summary here is, one, on December 1st, Russian authorities, they blocked Tor directory authorities. So if you have Tor installed on your computer, you cannot bootstrap Tor. they block a Tor browser bridge. So if you have Tor browser installed, you cannot use this bridge. They also block a domain fronting, Mickey Azure. So if you try to bypass censorship, that was not going to work. They also blocked Snowflake, and I'm going to talk a little bit later. And they also blocked a bunch of Tor bridges in different internet providers. So depends on where you are on Russia, you can use Tor, but in other places that was going to be more complicated. And the only way to bypass the censorship at that time on December 1st was to use a bridge from bridge.torpress.org or from our email. And so we start to fight the censorship. We launched a Telegram bot that you can get a bridge and that bridge is not blocked in Russia. And we test this bridge on our vantage points on Russia to see if they are blocked. If they are blocked, we ask for relay operator to rotate that IP address. So these bridges are working, and we are checking if they are, and we are checking and monitoring if they are working. The Tor community also fought back, and we and the Tor community spin up like more than 400 new Tor bridges in just a few days. And we have amazing volunteers translating Tor, user support guides in Russian. And after the first block on December 1st, the anti-censorship team also provided a fix for Snowflake, and this fix was available on Tor browser the last release. So you can see on this graph that Snowflake was around like less than 2,000 users, but after December, you can see it take a while, but then start to increase the number of Snowflake users in basically because of Russia. And you can see this graph here, there is a decrease here, is because the server crashed after too many users. So we fixed the server and we start to get more users. So if you want to help people in certain country, you can run a Tor bridge or you can run a Snowflake proxy, and that will be very helpful for Tor users in Russia. And a new update, during Christmas, we also had a new round of censorship in Russia. More bridges were blocked between December 23 and 24. We are going to reach out to relay operators and we are going to contact them and say, okay, you need to rotate your IP address if you want to get back in the game and fight censorship. And we are going to do that this week. Snowflake is working fine, and we have been working doing user support with Russian users, and we already answered more than 1,300 help requests since December 1st. Just for comparison, we solved 1,400 support tickets between January and November. So in 1 month, we already have more user support requests from Russia than in 12 months, basically. I will do a call here for the Internet Freedom community to spin up a Tor bridge or run a Snowflake proxy. If you cannot run a bridge, you can donate to relay associations. If you cannot donate, you can help and teach Tor users about bridges, or you can help localize Tor in Russian, or we can apply pressure. Like if you are part of a digital rights organization or human rights organization, help us to make pressure on Russia government and stand up in solidarity, like Edward Snowden did, and publish this calling the Russian government to stop blocking Tor. How to get involved? We are available on Tor IRC and Matrix channels. You can join us, our mailing list. They are public, and you can see what we are talking, and you can help. You can also join the Tor forum, and you can contribute on our GitLab. And for next year, we are going to improve. We are going to continue to improve our user support tools for users living in certain countries or regions. So one of our ideas is to provide a Telegram chat channel so users can communicate and have and get user support on Telegram. We are going to continue to develop the Tor Relay gamification project and continue to organize Tor trainings in the Global South, in Latin America and East Africa, and organize Relay Operators meetups. Today, we are going to have a Relay Operator meetup at 10 p.m. German time. And the link you can find on Tor Relay mailing list. And also, if you search on Twitter, on social media, you can also find that. Today we just covered some topics from the State of the Union. One month ago, we did a huge presentation, like 2 hours and a half, about anti-censorship, fundraising, UX, CISA Admin, and many other updates about RT, about V2 Onion deprecation, and many other topics. And you can watch that on YouTube. So I think that's it from my side, and we are open for more questions.
Thank you so much, guys. Like, obviously, Tor is a really important project, and it's honestly great to see how dedicated you are to basically helping everyone. I was actually, now we're going to go on to the question, and I was actually wondering something myself before we head over to taking the ones coming in from the internet. As far as I understand, like when you working with bridges and making sure to like avoid this censorship and everything, like as far as I understand, an important tool in this process are the meat bridges where you use huge cloud providers to basically mask traffic to Tor as like regular HTTPS website traffic. Does that not work in the case of Russia, or like what does the attack threat situation look like at the moment in that landscape?
I can answer in two parts. The first part is that some cloud providers, they don't like domain fronting. And so Amazon and others, they change their policy and they start to block, not just block, but to remove projects that were using domain fronting. So the only cloud provider that allows Tor or allow Tor to do that was Azure. And we had to limit the bandwidth on that. So if you use Mickey Azure on Tor browser, it's going to be very slow. And one thing that we, so this is the first part, like the providers, they don't like that. They were enforcing us to stop or remove just support. The other thing is that the bill, like the cost of running a Mickey Azure bridge or a Mickey Amazon bridge, that was too high and too costly. So Snowflake is the next step here, because it uses it uses domain fronting to connect you to a Tor proxy, Snowflake proxy. And the cost will be like very cheap, so you can get the benefit of domain fronting, and you can use a lot of proxies to connect Tor users, and that will not cost a lot of money for the Tor project and for Tor users. So that's is the way to go here. It's not look back, but look forward.
It sounds so cool. Like, obviously, it seems that this was very important, and actually hearing like some of the problems that you guys are facing in your fight, I think that's very interesting for all of us. So questions from the audience. The first one is that the apps that you're making, like the question is whether they would make you identifiable. So basically, if exactly those 5 apps are always calling home over the same Tor nodes, the question is if someone could link that back to you.
Do you want to talk about this, Des? Or should I?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think this should not be the case. I mean, depending on what kind of apps you have, how they are configured, some potential, timing signatures and stuff. So that's one of the things we are concerned, for instance, with Tor Browser, and trying to really make sure to break this up in the sense that folks can't learn anything about those patterns you have. It's hard, in particular, if adversaries can monitor, you know, exit nodes or endpoints over a long period of time. But generally, you should be protected from this kind of threat.
Right, that makes sense. So the next question is that if they understand correctly, the Tor organization is registered in the United States. Could the project be in danger of any government pressure to be discontinued? And have you guys ever planned to move to more neutral countries like Switzerland or similar?
So from my point of view, I don't think we suffer any pressure right now from US government. So I think one thing is the Tor project, and the other thing is the Tor network. The Tor network is, we have director authorities in different countries, and that just to avoid this kind of government pressure against the Tor network. So I think the question would be more like finding different ways to fund, to make Tor sustainable, not just like diversifying our funds so we don't be too connected with a government or one source provider of resource. I think this is happening right now. Isabella, the executive director, has changing a lot of our money income. If you look back in the Tor history, US government was adding a lot of money through to the Tor project in different by different ways, you know, like human rights projects and internet freedom projects. And this was basically how Tor is and was funded by US government, but not just US government, other governments like Swedish government too. So I think I would be more concerned about the Tor director authorities being in just one country. And that's not true. We are in different countries. And I never heard any kind of pressure from the US government against the nonprofit called the Tor project. So I think that is basically my answer here.
That's good to hear. And now to on to a maybe a little bit lighter question. Do Tor browser users have any chance or hope to see less captures in the future?
Yeah. I think we do have some hope. There is, I mean, not just only hope, but we have work ongoing solving this from different angles. The first one is outreach to major providers, trying to understand why they are blocking Tor or why they provide captures, and working with them to come up with solutions which are not only deployable by them, but by the wider industry. So there is a knowledge gap here, and then trying to figure out how we can solve this problem. And that's not only from a, you know, policy angle, but we plan to look into technical means as well. For instance, there's the idea of providing tokens to users, which they can spend anonymously at websites, for instance, and the websites can look for that and try to regulate the traffic, keeping the noisy bots out while providing good service to our Tor users providing such a token. That's another thing that won't be solved next year. It's a multi-year project too. We are a small organization, so there has to be, you know, some kind of prioritization. But that's definitely on our radar and a serious problem for us. So we should fix this.
Sounds like great initiatives, and also like they're going some of the way in order to some extent legitimize the use of the Tor browser. Maybe not as much in common society, but also when actually visiting different websites.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Next up is whether you guys are planning to figure out some kind of solutions for firewalls, for instance, the corporate ones that are slowing traffic down.
I don't know, Gus, do you have some, you know, queries or complaints from users for this particular issue? I'm not sure about that.
I just would be a very specific question.
It's also very fair to just say that it's not a problem that you've heard a lot of complaints about.
Right.
Yeah, just as true. I didn't heard about that. Like the CAPTCHA one is a popular one, but this one is I never heard.
Yeah, I think there are a bunch of larger things to fry here. There, it's not really in our, not even our top 10. So there's
right. I guess it can also be very hard for you guys to like work with figuring out how to prioritize all the different initiatives and the wishes that people have.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. unfortunately, we don't have time for any more questions right now, but there is a breakout room that people can come to, and you will answer any further questions. For now, we are going to have a break on this channel before the next talk that's going on at 2000, which is Cookie Banner, Das Online Werben Ökosystem und Google Preisträger Big Brother Awards 2021. For now, thank you very much, guys. Take care, and maybe we see you in the breakout room.